저기요.
수지 주세요. 짠.
짠.
Welcome back to the Pocha Playlist. Andy, we just saw you on Saturday for dinner. How was it?
It was good. We got some Mediterranean food, which had an hour-long line, apparently. And we got some drinks, the three of us together, and it was a good time.
That's good. Andy says it's one of his favorite restaurants in the Bay Area, and they opened the new location. It's called Mazra, M-A-Z-R-A. So for any Bay Area Plochas, feel free to check it out. It was in Redwood City?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was really good. On Sunday, we hung out again. Actually, no, on Monday, we hung out again and we recorded our Patreon episode for the month. So that will be coming out shortly. We reviewed Marry My Husband, and this was another Plocha request. Jenny, Andy, any thoughts overall?
So I feel like a bit of a spoiler, but it is number one on the Plocha playlist right now. So thank you, everybody who recommended it. I love that show. It's just so entertaining. It's like, it's one of those shows where you're not, too upset at the gripes. Everything's fun. The characters are fun. There's not, a deep message, in my opinion. But, the entertainment value was so high. I think every single episode, we had a great time watching it. And, yeah, I thoroughly loved it.
Yeah. Andy, how about you?
Yeah, I think Jenny just said it perfectly. I think it's something that the gripes is there, but it's kind of funny, I guess. You can laugh at the characters. The characters that are supposed to be villains are kind of goofy and funny to make it a little bit more lighthearted. Definitely do have gripes for the show, that's for sure. But it doesn't make it negative. I feel like it's not too much to make it very negative, right? You know? So
yeah. Brandon, what did you think?
When you have iconic characters like Minhwan and Soomin,
yeah,
how can you even really have gripes? Everything gets a pass whenever Minhwan comes on the screen and he just does whatever ridiculous antic that he's gonna do, or Soomin just does some crazy double crossing or scheming. It's just a very, very entertaining show.
Brandon, would you say that Minhwan is at least in your top five favorite villains that we've seen on Pocha Playlist? If maybe top three,
I would
he's
say
not
that
even a villain, huh? Is he?
He's a villain. He's a
100% of what you're talking about. Did you not watch? The whole purpose of the show was episode one because of him. So he's for sure a villain. But, I always said that I always thought that Jinmu from Alchemy was my number one villain. I think Minhwan tops it.
Oh, wow.
Really? He took number one spot? Ooh. All right, give it the test of time because we still talk about Jinmu to this day. Jinmu's great.
I still think about Minhwan to this day as well, but you're right, we got to give it the test of time. But it's gonna be fun.
I feel like his character is very similar to Chingu girl. They're very goofy and they make these crazy remarks, because Chingu girl is technically a villain too in that show, right? Because she's
was that
bratty.
A business proposal?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
but she's nowhere near a villain like Minhwan is.
Yeah, Minhwan is a bona fide villain in my head. No Chingu girl from Business Impossible, or Business Impossible, what am I saying? Business Proposal was just a goofy, bratty side character, but different vibes for sure.
Fair.
All right.
So now that we have April's Patreon out of the way, I think it's time that we officially announce next month's Patreon. We had a couple contenders, but so many people requested that we pick up this drama, and some of us, we had to discuss if it was even appropriate and whether we should do it for Patreon. But Jenny, do you want to officially announce it?
Yeah, so this is a show. Okay, first time in Pocha history, I would like to preface. This is a show that we dropped after four episodes. I think everyone's already oh, I know what it is. But we basically watched four episodes of it. We decided that we didn't like it. And to not be negative and just be hating on a drama for, however many weeks, we're let's just drop it, even though it was super, super popular. However, everybody in the beginning was okay, yeah, we kind of get it why you guys dropped it. Fair enough. But then it sounds like towards the middle of the drama, a switch was flipped and everyone's the redemption is there, and it got, all the things you guys had problems with, a lot of that kind of changed. So a lot of people have been basically asking us to pick back up Queen of Tears. And so we, you know, Brandon kind of mentioned this, but we were like, do we do it? We don't want to like be haters. And we also didn't want to space this out into multiple episodes. So I think we decided we would review it at once. And, you know, typically that kind of format we do on our Patreon. So, you know, this isn't like a, oh, you guys have to pay a bunch of money to hear a review. You know, we have like, we don't have a minimum for our Patreon, I think. So like,
you can pay anything.
I think you can pay like 50 cents if you want to, but it's more of like, you know, this is the type of format we usually do for Patreon, just in case we do hate it, even despite, you know, all the good things we've been hearing, just in case. We also didn't want to be like shitting on a really like popular great drama that other people loved. So anyhow, it's going to be on our Patreon, but we will be reviewing all of Queen of Tears and being very honest with our thoughts. And I mean, I haven't seen any new episodes, but I am really hoping, based off of everyone's feedback, that it is going to be fun. So that is my long-winded reveal of our May Patreon.
I hope everyone gets excited. We, you know, I think this shows that we do listen when you guys, you know, your voices are heard. I think someone started like a mini petition on our Insta post. They were like this post if you want us to pick it up again. And I don't know what the count went up to, but your wish is granted. We are going to review it.
And I am excited. I am excited. I think, you know, I'm very excited to do this whole drop and then pick up. It's just never happened before, because usually we're very steadfast in our belief that like, once we don't like a drama, like I think you've mentioned this a bunch of times, but it's like once there's a sour taste in our mouth, sometimes we just like can't get over it. But everyone's saying the sour taste is there for a reason, so you know what, we'll give it a shot.
Well, there you go. I'm very excited to start it again. But without further ado, we have a packed agenda today. We're going to do Midnight Studio episodes 9 and 10, and then we're going to review the final episodes of Parasite the Grey, and then we'll rank it. Let's start with Midnight Studio first. Jenny?
Sounds good.
Cheers!
So I think officially, you know, we are now on 9 and 10, so officially past the halfway point. At this point, our relationships are pretty strong, I would say, like starting off with the main couple, Kiju and Hanbom. I think most of the secrets at this point have basically come out for their relationship. You know, I think two of the big ones is A, Kiju's death, upcoming death has finally been revealed to Hanbom. And I think she took it a certain way at first, and then she kind of comes around. And then the second piece that we've been kind of talking through is the how they might have met in a younger version of themselves, and you know how that could have happened. So, you know, I think we'll start off with the first one, which is Kiju's upcoming death. And I want to just get your guys' thoughts. I mean, at this point, it seems like everyone understands what's going to happen, but what are your predictions for, you know, is Kiju actually going to die from this? You know, how is their relationship going to move forward now knowing there's going to be a deadline?
I don't think there's any way in hell that he's going to die. So
really? You don't think so?
What kind of show would that be if the main actor died, you know? I don't know if he's going to die and come back, but there's just no way he stays dead. So I am not worried whatsoever. Andy?
Well, technically didn't the curse almost go away? Because he did, at the end of the episode, he turned 36, right? The subtitle said he's now 36, or it's his birthday?
No. I think that was like he's manifesting this for himself. So turning 36 is something he's manifesting for himself.
I see. Okay, so I'm completely wrong.
Yeah.
But in terms of her finding out, I feel like that was a really good review. I feel like I was feeling the emotions when Ghost Boy told her that, hey, you know, this is a funeral photo. And I felt those emotions hit. I was like, whoa, she's feeling it. She realized that. And then when she realized that, like, oh, he kind of lied to her, this created this separation, you know, this angst that, like, you know, in all these romantic shows, they always have to have angst around episode, like, 9 to 13. I feel like they did it relatively well, because I can feel the anger from her of, like, why didn't you tell me that you're going to die? So in terms of the angst, like, for romance, I feel like it was done. It was not bad. Not bad.
Yeah, I really feel for her, because, you know, she has a best friend that is potentially going to die. Her man's is going to die. So, you know, that scene where she was like, you know, you're not allowed to die. I'm not going to let you die or whatever. That was a really, really cute scene. And even when they're on the bus, they're like sitting together, but on two separate sides. And she doesn't want to like interact or look at him, but they're just by chance, there's an evil demon that's coming. So they have to like hold hands to get the protection. And then her like heart just kind of melts. I thought that was a really good scene. But Jenny, going over to you, do you think that he's going to die?
I don't know. I actually think he might. Because, like, I just feel like if he doesn't die, the whole purpose of his curse kind of goes away. And now that we have the introduction of the uncle in the Nether Realms, like, he's kind of, like, helping ferry, you know, the souls maybe potentially or something, like guiding the souls in that Nether Realm. I have a feeling it's like he could die, but then he like makes it back or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm like, is it like overthinking this.
Pirates of the Caribbean, where he becomes the person that ferries.
Are you talking about Davy Jones?
Yeah, he can only like meet her once every 10 years or whatever.
I don't know. That's the thing. I'm like, I feel like I could see something like that happening. Not like to the Pirates of the Caribbean level. We're not talking about Elizabeth Swann and Will Turner right now. But like, I feel like there's something where he is going to have to pass over. But then there's just so much spiritual realm stuff going on that I don't think it's going to be like permanent. So that's my prediction.
Got it. Well, I guess Andy and I were kind of wrong because it turns out that she actually is the girl. And
Emblem is the baby ghost. Yeah. Just
forgot. So I don't know how that's going to play into it. Yeah, she's just up and forgot. And apparently she has two names.
She's like, oh, that's my nickname. Actually, when that came out, I started laughing because I was like, oh, that's how they explain it. It was just like, because both of you guys, and Brandon, especially you, you were like, dude, it's a different name. Like, there's no way it's the same person. They're like, oh, it's a nickname.
I don't even feel bad. I think that's a big cop-out. If you just, oh, give her a different name to throw us off the scent. It's not cool, man.
Yeah, but I think it was cute. I mean, I assume that I thought that the whole childhood connection would have played a bigger role for, like, I don't know, just like a mystery kind of aspect of like, oh, like, who is this? Blah, blah, blah. And I just feel like they kind of brushed it over. I mean, we got some cute scenes out of it, you know, when they go camping and he kind of puts it together and then she's running down the trees and all that. But like, I thought that it was kind of a lot more casual than what I expected. But what did you guys think?
It was a great scene when they were in that. Yeah. Oh, every K-drama has to have the scene where it's like the long cement like sidewalk under like the row of trees on left and right, and it creates like a tunnel.
Yeah,
and like they always have that scene, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, that was cute. All right, fair enough. Andy,
okay. What about you? We can recreate that scene where we're going to be in New York in like 2 weeks, and there's a cherry blossom bloom going on right now, so we can recreate that scene together.
That's true. It'll be cute. We'll put it on our Poach Instagram. All right, fair enough. Well, I think that kind of wraps up our main couple then. You know, I think it sounds like we all are still feeling them. They're very cute. But, you know, a couple other couples are happening very strongly in the sidelines. I would say one that I feel like is kind of wrapping up is the Detective Ghost love story with his wife. You know, I think last week we left off where we found out that the wife was seeing a florist, and, you know, kind of the relationship dynamics come out more in the open this week, where you find out, you know, she was just very lonely because he was out saving the world and kind of leaving her by herself. So she ended up finding another guy. You know, I think at this point, it doesn't seem like Detective's gonna become a bad ghost. You know, it seems like he just kind of feels bad for everything. But what did you guys think of the developments?
I think my commentary last week still holds true. I think it's interesting to see him start to maybe toe that line of do I let my anger turn me into an evil ghost? But I actually thought that they were going to go a little bit further into that and actually have him kind of go semi-bad for a little while. But he's very reserved. And, you know, at the end of the day, unfortunately, he's dead and his wife needs to still live, and if there's someone that can take care of her while he's away, I mean, you know, I feel like there's a silver lining to this kind of.
Yeah, that's fair. Andy, do you have any thoughts on that relationship?
So it does feel like they're maybe misleading. I don't know if it's like she's cheating on him, or like she met this guy before when he was still alive, or maybe there's like some misleading information that's going on. I feel like not all the pieces are out there for us to fully understand. Like, maybe it's not even like she's cheating on him. Maybe it's just some guy or like a cousin or something, or like just something going on. I feel like
I definitely don't think it's a cousin, because they met at like a floor arrangement class. That's and true. Then like he did see those like messages between each other.
He was like hugging her and she was like, don't come back. That's I'd be very weird if it was a real, if it was a, like, I'm not
their dynamic is so cousins, like one-sided, so. And then for her to like for him to be so one-sided, it means that she probably reciprocated in the past too. So does that mean that she straight up was just cheating on her husband when her husband was still alive? And if she was doing that, that means now that the husband is dead, like, it's still not really fully justified because she was cheating on him when he was alive, right?
Yeah, I do feel like it's a very interesting predicament because he now finally understands, like, he's like, oh, wow, I really wasn't there for my wife. But then you can't get over the fact that your wife did still technically see another guy while you guys were in a marriage. But you can argue that maybe the fact that she was trying to get the divorce, you know, is like not too terrible because she kind of realized it was bad. But I do hear you. It's like a very tangled web, which leads me to another question. Do you guys think that detective's going to see his wife as his final photo? Because, you know, he might be like, we're better off just, you know, leaving each other be at this point.
I'm not really worried about trying to like justify her actions. Like, she did what she did, but she's not really the main character here. Sure. I just care more about the guy getting closure, and he has the unique ability where he can, it's like all seeing, you know, he's a ghost now. So he just needs to come to terms with everything. And I think I don't want him to take all of the blame. You know, we see so many K-dramas where there's a cop involved and we know that they have to dedicate their entire life to that occupation.
Yeah.
So it's nothing we haven't seen. Mm-hmm. So if he can at least just get some closure from him and her,
So you do want them to meet?
Oh yeah, of course, because I don't think he can move on to the afterlife unless he gets it, you know.
Yeah. Andy, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, they do, I feel like they do have to meet, but I don't really want to watch that moment because then I'm gonna just feel so bad for the guy.
Andy, like, hates cheaters.
No, I was like, oh, it's so sad because he cares about her so much, but like, I guess she doesn't really care about him. And like, even through death, he still cares about her, and she's kind of like, well, we don't know if she still cares about him. So it's,
yeah. I almost feel like it depends on how they play it, but if she takes back the florist and they just kind of go and stay together, I don't think Detective Ghost should meet with her at the photo booth. I think he should just let them go. But I think if she's still hesitant about taking a new guy because of Detective, I think it'd be very sweet for him to be like, hey, look, I get it. I'm sorry I wasn't there for you. I hope this guy makes you happy. And then, like, leaves it. So, like, it kind of depends on how the other relationship plays out. But I don't think they have to meet. I feel like at this point, he's getting enough closure just from seeing, you know, her reactions to some of these things. So that's my thought.
I think it's reverse. I think it's they meet and then he's gonna tell her, hey, I'm okay with you seeing that florist, you know, I'm sorry I couldn't have been there for you when I was alive, but, you know, at least someone is going to be there with you now. And then she's gonna go meet the florist. I think it'll be like that.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right. Well, second couple, other ghostly couple, you know, I think these episodes, the second lead love line is really developed between Glasses Ghost and Jiwon. And, you know, I think both sides are now kind of aware that the other person, like who that other person is and like what role they played in that whole blind date fiasco from a while ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm eating it up, but wanted to see if you guys had any other thoughts on them.
I'm so upset because I'm now starting to really, really like this couple. I think they're really cute. But like, I've been saying it for like 3 weeks now. One of them is alive. The other is dead. What the hell is happening? And I just don't want to root for someone to die so that they can be together. I also don't think it makes sense if they somehow bring Glasses Guy back alive, right? So
Or
it's going to be like, he's just always going to be a ghost being there for her, and they're gonna,
that could
if
be
they
happy.
Try to like do some alive person dating a ghost relationship, that'll be interesting.
That's hilarious. I mean, they already have some of like a method of communication, right? Because he technically can just possess bodies, so like she could be dating a new guy every week if she wanted to.
he could go possess Hyunbin's body for 30 minutes, date her, It's going to be very, very unique. I also feel like this show is really breaking a lot of the stereotypes on what a ghost can and can't do. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, this guy's really powerful. The fact that he can, like, possess anyone, he can pick things up, throw things, write letters. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's not really breaking these stereotypes, though, no? Is like, it? These are all typical ghostly things.
I guess I'm thinking, like, Casper the Ghost is very different. You just can't do anything.
Fair enough. I didn't know we were talking about a Casper, but sounds good. All right. Well, let's get into the case for this week. It sounds like all the love lines are pretty talked through at this point. So wanted to talk about this new case. We have the, I guess there was a killer who was framed, and this was one of the cases that Baum worked on while she was a prosecutor, which basically got her on the shit list for now this kind of main prosecutor guy. You know, this is a very interesting case because it's directly involving people on our kind of core group, and we're kind of in this like problem solving mode where it's like we actually need to figure out who was the person that framed the ghost that came back. How are you guys taking this one? It's a little bit different than, you know, the emotional cases that we've gotten in the past, but are you kind of liking this format and this case itself?
Yeah, this one is interesting because, yeah, what you just said, it involves the core case. Also, we have this reoccurring like side character who is this lawyer. And from this case, it gives us the information that he is probably corrupt and he's probably like, you know, he ignored some of the key like evidence that would put our guy as the framed killer, which leads us to suspect that he's probably going to be one of the final villains in this last act of this K-drama, besides this like evil ghost character. So it's a good way to segue into, I guess, the final section and wrapping up who are these final characters of the show.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good segue into kind of wrapping up Baum's career too, I feel like, because he's the main reason she's had such a hard time and just struggled with it. So I definitely see that point. Brandon, do you have anything you want to add?
No, I think this show has just done a phenomenal job of always introducing very, very unique and different cases. Mm-hmm. And yet again, they gave us a new one. I thought the frame killer thing was really, really interesting. It was so sad to see his backstory. Like, he just wanted to care for his sister, and his horrible friends like coerced him into doing another con. And then, unfortunately, all those bad things happened. So I'm glad that they're using this case to revive kind of Boom's career storyline, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of got put on hold because now she could see ghosts and all. So yeah, this show's just really, really smart, and I like that.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, it sounds like, you know, we'll probably be reviewing up to episode 14 next week. So right now we just finished 9 and 10. So before we kind of get into the last couple episodes of the show, I did want to just get a couple predictions. So I think we kind of talked about Baum's career. It sounds like we're seeing a light at the end of the tunnel for how that's going to get resolved now, kind of since we're getting closure on the main case of her career. Wanted to see about the other characters. I mean, there's a lot of people who are on the potential death list, and I think I already put in my prediction earlier for Kiju, and you guys did as well. Anyone else that we think is gonna maybe, I don't know, make a visit to the Midnight Studio, kind of on in a bad way before they pass Baum. Over? You think Baum?
Yeah, why not? If you think Kiju's gonna die, then I'll say Humbum's gonna die. They go down together, right?
I mean, they can both be happy in the afterworld, I guess, together. So
same with Glasses Ghost. All four of them should just, everyone dies in the show.
Is that your formal predict?
Humbum, sure.
Wow. Okay. I feel like you're not taking this seriously. I'm a little disappointed in you.
Well, I'm thinking what Brandon said earlier too. For the second lead, there's no way like one has to. They both either have to die or one of them has to come back alive. And I feel really bad that, like, so I don't want to call her Cancer Girl, but I think she
D1?
I don't know how it is a nickname for her, but she can't. I feel like she can't die because she is the supporting character for Hambom. And I'm like, you're just about to lose your best friend. And like, so you're going to live your whole life if Hambom survives to the very end. Hambom's gonna lose like her best friend, and so, yeah, I don't think that's a really happy ending. So I would say she's not gonna die. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you might be right, Andy. I actually now don't think Jiwon's gonna die, and I think it's gonna be kind of a bittersweet thing for Glasses Ghost and her, where it's like, you know, they recognize that that was just a love line that could have happened and never did, but I don't think she'll actually die. Earlier on, I thought she would have because of her whole terminal illness, but I think at this point she won't. I truly think Kiju's gonna be the one that dies in this one. I don't think anyone else is gonna,
you know,
is going to.
So that means if he dies, that means the curse continues to go on for the next generation, right? Which means that if he dies in the next couple episodes, that means Hanbom, she's got a baby ready in her. Right.
Well, he technically was like, I don't really, you know, I want to be the last of my generation so this curse doesn't happen. Okay, but yeah, I don't know, man. I think he got his first kiss, so man's moving really fast in life in these last, I don't know, 80 days.
I think a cute storyline, not cute, but it would be cute if Jiwon does end up dying, then her picture on the couch is with Glasses Guy and they get one picture together and they both hold hands and like go to the afterlife together.
Yeah,
it would be cute.
It would be sad, but I see what you're saying.
It would be cute. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, well, you know, next week we'll be reviewing up to episode 14, so basically the pre-finale episodes, and then we're gonna be basically doing one other week, sorry, not next week, the week after, since we won't be putting out an episode next week. But anyhow, so we're almost at the finale, and I think so far it doesn't seem like we have too many gripes with the show. We're all enjoying it, so excited to finish it up.
All right, well, I think that wraps up Midnight Studio. Andy, do you want to get into the final few episodes of Parasite the Grey?
Cheers!
Yep, so we are doing Parasite the Grey, episodes 4 to 6, very short K-drama, only 6 episodes long. And I do want to start this by apologizing, actually, because I don't know why last week I compared this show with Shop for Killers, because it is definitely not close enough to Shop for Killers. I think this is definitely one of the shows that I would say the tail end of the show was, my personal opinion, a little bit better than the first three episodes. So I kind of had a sour taste in my mouth in the first three episodes, and that did go away. For these, so good thing to know is I definitely appreciated where this direction the show went. But we can start off first with the parasites, because the biggest things that happened in this episode is we do get a lot of deaths, specifically with the detective officer who gets killed. And the biggest plot, I guess, twist that came out was that the parasite, the church parasite, the preacher, was actually betraying the rest of his parasite people. What did you guys think about this betrayal, all in all?
There's a lot to unpack there. I guess before we even get into the betrayal, I totally agree with you, Andy. I actually liked the first three episodes, and surprisingly, I thought the second three episodes were even better. I mean, they did a really good job of uniquely tying up this storyline. I know we were all wondering, could they finish this storyline by episode 6, and do we think there's going to be a sequel bait? I don't think so. I think they wrapped up the storyline. Going into your question, I thought the parasite betrayal was really, really unique, and I had no idea that that was going to be the case. And I remember ripping my hair out, because the leader of the Team Gray, I was just like, why can't you just listen to Heidi and them? But then it didn't happen the way Heidi said it would, because there was the parasite betrayal. They actually did ambush the other parasites and they slaughtered everyone. So I thought that was really unique. And the ultimate plan of them trying to like take over that mayor or that official, I thought that was really, really smart, because I didn't know that they could swap bodies after that. You know, when they took over the police head, I thought that was really unique. And then I was like, well, now you could take over the hell the president if you wanted to. So that master plan was really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I do think it was interesting that they threw in a betrayal, because I think it added kind of character to the parasite group as a whole, because they're not just this one organization that's one mind and they just come in here and they have no thoughts. Like I feel like they really develop every parasite's like ideas and kind of like their own motivations and even some of their emotions as well. So I thought the betrayal was really good, and I'm glad that they did it, because it just makes the storyline a little bit more interesting. It's not like you're dealing with these like zombie things. Like, these parasites are intelligent and they have bigger plans, and sometimes they are selfish, and I think that it just makes it more interesting.
Oh yeah, I'm really glad you talked about the parasites, how it adds character to the parasites, because I think that's what I was struggling with in the first three episodes, where I was like, man, it feels very stale, and I feel like a lot of the characters are really one-dimensional, especially with Lady Grey's officer, the head officer. I feel like she was just so fresh. I didn't know what else to call her.
Lady Grey. Oh, you're talking about the Grey team's
like, Grey team leader. Person. Yeah, the head honcho girl.
Sorry, I was like, Lady Grey. She was, fair enough. Good nickname.
She was really frustrating in the first three episodes. Mm-hmm. Even still frustrating in episodes 4, 5, and 6. And yeah. When she just won't listen to Heidi, I was like, dude, you're so annoying. Like, she's literally telling you what's going to happen. And when the parasite betrayal happened, I was like, okay, yeah, there's no reason for her to believe Heidi anymore, essentially. And I was like, okay, that's pretty cool and different writing. And, I mean, I was going to talk about it later, but I guess we can talk about her character right now. Do we feel like her character is redeemed at the very end? Because, you know, she, I guess, had a change of pace. She finally started listening to them. And we have that, like, one scene at the very end where she kind of trusted Heidi to not shoot Heidi.
I think my issue with her, there's a broader issue that I do have with the show. It's that, like, in the first three episodes, in my head, these parasites were going to keep coming, keep multiplying. It's going to just eventually take over the world. And then by episode 6, it seems like most of the parasites are pretty much all gone.
Yeah.
And in my head, there's only one left, which is Heidi. And Heidi is, I think she's kind of proven that Heidi can be kept under control. So, like, she's kind of redeemed, yes, in the fact that she allows Heidi to, like, leave by the end. But, you know, if that wasn't the case, where there were still new parasites coming and they were still a threat, I don't know if she would have been that lenient. I don't know if I'm, like, coming across clear. But, you know, the whole, like, issue of the parasites kind of resolved itself, and it just came down to just one mega parasite, if that makes sense. The main parasite,
the boss parasite.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, for, you know, to answer your question, Andy, I never had the biggest issue with Lady Grey. Like, I always thought she was just very hard-headed, and she was kind of frustrating to watch, but I also, like, I could understand her because of what she went through with her husband, and, like, you know, she doesn't know any better. So it's like, we're all trying to figure this stuff out. She thinks that she's right because of her experiences with this one parasite that took over her husband. But at the same time, you know, she does have, like, an open enough mind to, like, consider these alternatives. And at the end of the day, you know, she doesn't kill Heidi, and she kind of, you know, makes the right call in that final battle. So I'm like, in my head, she's going to be an okay character. She was a little bit intense, but I don't think her character has really changed. I don't think she necessarily needed to be redeemed in my book. She was never, like, evil. I thought she was going to get evil, and she never really got evil. So I'm okay with how they kind of tied up her storyline.
So I feel like I had a thought last week that there might be some recruits over to Heidi's team. And that sort of came true, but not in the way that I expected it. But I did really like that. I think his name is Kangu.
Yeah.
His sister, the parasite that's in his older sister, she obviously takes big offense to the betrayal, as she should, and she joins the other team. I thought that final showdown with everyone was really, really cool. I liked that.
Yeah. I really liked how she apologized as well. Like, to me, that kind of just went back to my point of, like, we just got these, like, emotional sides of the parasites. And, you know, it was really, like, even though she really screwed up Kangu's entire life, like, I appreciated the apology. And it just made that final scene feel more meaningful when she kind of, like, you know, sacrifices herself to, like, fight the other parasite. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I feel like also, since we're talking about Kangu now, I think his character definitely seen a lot of progression this past three episodes. I feel like we get a lot more backstory on him of, like, his interaction with the detective, when the detective calls him a coward, and he was just always going to run away from things. And it really honed him that, like, okay, he's going to finally take a stand and, you know, defend, like, and do what is kind of right. At the end of the show, you know, we get a, it comes all full circle. He just goes back to DP, you know, he's becoming a soldier again. So.
Right, right.
But I really like his character. I think his character is a really fun character to watch. And especially with his sister interaction, and he also loses his friend because his friend decides to die for him. I was like, wow, I really liked his character a lot.
I do think if we're going to talk about like one gripe that I had, you know, it's kind of around the friend and his death. Mm. I thought it was really silly when they like went back to save the friend only for them to then do have nothing. The friend killed anyways and then just have the parasites hot on their tails. Like, that was just such a bad call. Like, it was just such a bad decision. I just don't really understand. And like, sure, I get it, but I'm also like, wow, that was just so like did not go the way that it should.
To be fair, they were like, they have no way of knowing that Heidi is hibernating for 30 minutes, and as soon as they walk in, the parasite's like, I know Heidi is not with you right now.
Yeah, I guess.
But so, I mean,
it's, yeah, I think, Jenny, I was on the same boat as you, like, right after he died, and I was like, wait, the last 10 minutes, nothing really happened, like, so they could have just not even included those 10 minutes in it, and the show wouldn't have changed, I felt like.
Exactly, yeah. Like, the whole introduction of the friend was so unnecessary, I feel like they just, I don't know who that
really good
buff
friend
guy
too.
Yeah, was.
That's
like,
a good friend.
They were like, we just really want to show everybody some abs in this show. And that was like, that was it. Like, they were like, all right, now you're done. You can die now.
And Mans had a full-on portrait of himself with his body on the wall. So sure. That was impressive. I don't know. My biggest gripe still is the, are we calling her Lady Grey now?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lady Grey was just the biggest gripe because she just like wouldn't listen. I just almost like, she just wasn't thinking. And I'm like, Heidi keeps telling her, hey, you have parasites in your team. And she keeps saying, I've already checked them one time at the beginning of all of this. And I'm like, so you can't even fathom that since you've tested everyone the first time that you could get infiltrated after and you should check everyone again. And she told them two people and she's like, well, I already checked one of them. And even Heidi was like, what about the other one? There's two of them. I was like, that was so frustrating. And then like Heidi's like, hey, come meet me at this cafe. And then of course she has to bring people.
Everyone,
so like that ruins trust. Yeah. When she like, even she's like starting to suspect them. And when she leaves the city to go on this other mission, because she was instructed to by her leader, and Heidi calls and she's like, hey, I'm going to try and stop this from happening. The first thing she does when she comes back is try to capture Heidi and not.
Oh, yeah.
The other people. So she was just a really frustrating character all the way up until the end, where then she, like, you know,
makes the right call.
Yeah. So I don't know. She was the biggest downer for me on the show.
I think for me, the biggest downer was the other cop, like the fake officer, the fake that I think we're calling him. He was the one that was like kind of helping the parasites despite the fact that he was a human. I feel like his reason to take everything really far was so not justified. Like, I was like, what? I don't understand the vision. Like, what
Didn't
are you
Didn't
he
just
seeing?
Say the parasites know more than us, so I'm going to blindly follow them?
He was
them.
Like, this guy's really smart. I'm going to listen to him. I'm like, bro. Bro, like, I don't understand. Like, you're literally out here killing your own people because this guy convinced you, like, in, like, 25 seconds that it's worth it. Like, I was like, you're tripping. So he was the only character I was like, that's dumb. But I don't know.
Talking about officers, though, I will say that I was not expecting for the good cop to just get his head cut off like that.
Oh,
yeah,
RIP.
Yeah.
But from a plot perspective, the fact that the parasite can infiltrate that cop, it was like genius, you know? But would you guys have rather him not die?
I think that was like that made the moment pretty good, though. I was like, oh, shoot, he died because we were really rooting for him. And then, dude, he becomes the head of him. And I was like, whoa, that's a little creepy over there, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think it helped in the moment. I think I was literally standing up. I was like, oh my God, his head came off. And then when the head switched and it was his head again, I was like, ah. But like, I was sad though, because I was like, oh, I really wanted him to live. Because like, I felt like Heidi just didn't really have anyone. And like, Kang was kind of flaky, you know, up until the very end. So I was just like, oh, like, this guy was the only person that I feel like she really trusted and really had her back. So I was just sad that he died for her sake. But I get it for the point of the plot.
I do think that, like, so when the alien was controlling the good detective, a lot of times in a lot of shows, I really kind of get turned off by that, because then they're like, oh, he's getting away with things, kind of a thing, right? He's always like acting like a puppet, but no one could ever figure it out. But the way he's acting feels very like robotic, very alien, very different, that like I was down to keep watching it. I wasn't frustrated by that character. So I think they just did a really good job of writing that character, in the sense that it's not like a frustrating puppet character that we see in a lot of other movies or shows.
Yeah, I get you. It's like one of those things where if someone just paid a little bit more attention, he wouldn't have gotten away with it. Yeah. But it was just because everyone was so, you know, in their own world that he was able to scrape by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. Overall, I one thing I wanted to ask you guys, if you remembered, like, Duty After School, a big gripe that we had was just the explanation on the aliens, like their motives, like where the hell did they come from, what were they trying to do. You know, I personally don't really feel like this show did a great job of explaining the parasites. You know, I kind of mentioned it earlier, one parasite kind of just takes everyone else out, and then you're left with Heidi at the end. Like, how do you think about the parasites in this show, because it is a sci-fi show?
Yeah, I agree. I think they didn't really show that much explanation. Like, I don't, at the end of the day too, I don't think I have to care too much. Like, how did they land on Earth? I'm sure, from asteroid maybe. How do they reproduce, kind of a thing. Like, a full explanation, I feel like we don't really need to know. Like, do they, all the parasites know each other by name? Like, you're like, oh, you're the one that can fly, kind of a thing. But there's only like 30 of them. So, you know, you're in the classroom, like, you should know your buddies, right? Like, oh, you're the flyer guy, kind of a thing. But they didn't really explain any of that too. And then, like, the mutant, they're like, oh, wait, Heidi over there, apparently she's a mutant. We've known her for 1,000 years, but now she's a mutant. Like, they don't really explain any of that, too, you know, because clearly they know each other, right? So,
yeah, but I do think, like, One Piece, you know, just to kind of answer those, I do feel like they imply that these parasites were just created with one singular task, which was to, like, kill humans. And so I don't think it was, like, they were an alien species on their own little alien land, and they were all like buddy buddies, and then they all kind of like, oh, let's conquer Earth. I think they were all like created in this little pod, and they were like born immediately onto Earth, and then they took over people. So I feel like there wasn't really like existing characters up until they started taking over the bodies from like the parasite side. And I think they do explain, Brandon, that like there are other parasites in different locations. So I think you kept saying like, oh, it's only Heidi left. I don't think that's the case. Mm-hmm. I want to say that they dropped like everywhere on Earth.
Oh, okay. Yes. So there are other parasites.
There are other parasites. So it's not like they wiped them all out.
But so that's why I think at the end of the episode 6, we get the introduction of this Japanese character, I think, which is supposed to be a reference to, you know, their Team Gray of Japan, kind of a thing. Or maybe he's a parasite. Right. So,
well, Jenny, you mentioned last week about the, like, this is a different spin-off show. And I imagine, like, maybe, I bet other people who are into this series and the webtoons or whatever might know who that character is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. It just completely went over my head. I don't know who he was.
Yeah.
And I guess that makes sense, because I remember Kangwoo gets hired by the team as well. So they are going to, I guess they could keep the show going. And second season, it's like, hey, we need to bring Heidi in again because she is the mutant.
Mm-hmm. The mutant.
Yeah. Overall, even though we kind of spend a lot of time on the gripes, I really enjoyed the show. You know, I really didn't have an issue with the first three. And like I said, the second three, outside of the Lady Gray's character, I really liked it. Like, they really surprised me. So overall, zooming out, like, over 6 episodes, I thought this was a phenomenal show.
Yeah, I thought the show did pretty good job, but only 6 episodes. It was very concise. I feel like the storyline was pretty big. I feel like sci-fi shows are really hard to do in 6 because you got to really do a big world building. And this wasn't even an hour and 10 minutes. This was a 45-minute episode for each one. So I thought a pretty good job. Definitely have a lot of gripes for the show. But, I mean, at the end of the day, more positive than negatives for sure for me.
Jenny?
Interesting. I'm surprised to hear you have a lot of gripes. I feel like this show, it was a good storyline. I think the pacing was solid. You know, the only downside for me, I would say, is just I don't feel like a super strong emotional connection to any of the characters. So, like, I don't know. Like, I feel like in a lot of sci-fi shows, I'm like really rooting for certain people. But for this one, I don't really feel that strongly. I think it's also because Heidi is just so strong that like I never feel like I'm worried about their safety. And then for Kang Woo, I feel like he was kind of flaky up until like the last couple episodes. So like I also wasn't like super, super emotionally invested in his well-being. So like that's the only downside for me where I'm like, oh, the characters themselves, I'm not like, oh, I love this group. I love this little crew. I hope that they do so well. I want to see another season with them. But if we zoom out from the storyline perspective, I agree with everything you guys have said. Like, it's very creative. I appreciate, like, the explanations that they do provide. So, yeah, it was a fun watch.
Well, I think we should take that energy right into the ranking. So, like Jenny mentioned earlier, Marry My Husband is now number one on our Pocha list for 2024. Following that, we have Wedding Impossible, Dr. Slump, A Shop for Killers, and Killer's Paradox last. I can go first. I would put it... Well, I guess I'm just trying to decide, do I want it above or below Wedding Impossible?
Mm.
But I don't think it's better than Marry My Husband. But I did like this one better than Dr. Slump. Granted, it's 6 concise episodes versus 16 that kind of dragged out. Where would you guys think? Below or above Wedding? Anywhere around there?
You know, it's tough. I feel like from like a storyline pacing, it was a lot better than Dr. Slump. But I actually like the character, like the two main characters in Dr. Slump a lot more than like any of the characters in Parasite. But at the same time, I do feel like it's a different type of show. So like maybe we can't really compare the characters apples to apples.
What do you think, Andy?
Andy, what about you?
Well, at first, before you said above or below Wedding Possible, I was actually thinking above or below Marry My Husband at first. And then when you said that, I was like, okay, yeah, it makes more sense. Probably above or below Wedding Impossible. I think if that was the case, I would put it above Wedding Impossible. I think Wedding Impossible was good, but it was still a lot more gripes for me. I think this show was concise in 6 episodes, and I felt like that twist was a pretty good twist for me to change my mind. Maybe because I'm in the upward trajectory right now from going from 0 to 100, right? So maybe I'm giving it a little bit more of a positive note, whereas you guys has always been like flatline for you for the show, probably.
No, I agree. And if we think about like gripes for the show, I just had like one annoying character, but in the end she was redeemed versus like Wedding Impossible. Like if you guys remember like the last 4 to 6 episodes, like it was all gripes. Yeah. On the show, like we didn't like where it was going, like the energy, like the drama, the issues, like, so I'm okay with
number two
below Marry My Husband, which is shocking. I didn't think it ranked that high.
I know this is the first time we ranked a sci-fi show really high, actually, because besides Moving, I guess that doesn't really count, I guess.
that's true. Okay, but, well, I think that's fine.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I mean, if anything, like, I feel like if I were to typically watch a K-drama, Parasite the Grey would probably not be, like, my number one choice. But I think, you know, gotta recognize the positives, and I'm okay with it being number two.
Yeah, real recognize real.
One more thing that I thought was really funny. One of the biggest gripe I also had for the show was, you know, the public knowledge of this Parasite thing. Like, I feel like they never really showed, you know, public knowledge of it, and I feel like that's a really big thing in sci-fi shows. Like, for example, I also hated the mayor because he wanted to host this big festival kind of a thing, and he was just so annoying because there's parasites happening and like you want to still do this. And then when he gets attacked, I thought it was really funny because he's like, Mr. President, get down, kind of a moment where everyone is trying to like protect him and everything. I thought that was really funny to me. So
dude, I agree. When he was like, we need to, I don't know, it was like there's this national like folk singer that we need to crowd. I was like, are you for real, my guy? Like, what is the priorities right now?
The so, break dancers need to break dance.
Dude, yeah, the first year was doing break dancing. I was like, what is this, Street Man Fighter? Is that what you guys cared about? Like, what is happening? So ridiculous. Okay, well, I think we ranked our show. So pretty solid list so far. Marry My Husband, Parasite the Grey, then we have Wedding Impossible, Dr. Slump, then we have Shop for Killers and Killer's Paradox. So very interesting list that we have for this year.
We're moving along, guys. You know, there is the 2024 slump. I think we've all experienced it. But going forward, I feel like we have a lot of great dramas coming out. We are going to pick up Lovely Runner next. I'm very excited. Terry messaged me today. He said it's his favorite drama of the year.
Wow. You know,
I don't trust this guy anymore.
I heard it's really good, and I think I see a lot of commentary in the Discord about people talking about it, so I am excited to start it. I think the jury is still out on what we'll pick up after Midnight Studio, but a lot of people recommended Midnight Romance in Hagwon or something like that. So
it's the first we had you rom-com or romance, not rom-com, but romance. So everyone's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, so we got a lot of great stuff coming. I'm excited.
Yeah, so message us if you guys have any other K-dramas that you're like, oh my gosh, you guys have to pick this up. I know there were some that might have aired already this year as well, but just let us know if there's anything you really liked, and then we will add it to our list of potential pickups.
We should have mentioned this in the intro, but once again, all of us are going to be in New York, so we will not be putting out an episode next week. We'll come back the following week, and we will catch up on Midnight Studio, and we'll talk about Lovely Runner. Socials?
Yeah, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and Pledge a Playlist. Check us out on Ko-Fi and our Patreon. Patreon is where we have our Marry My Husband Patreon episode. And finally, please leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
And
this is the Pledge a Playlist. We're out.